Right? It's Tuesday?
Yes.
Feels like a Friday. I wish it was.
You're going to come in tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Yeah, all right.
I'll be here.
Because it is, as you mentioned, it is Tuesday, and if memory serves me right, we'll probably look at a Wednesday tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see how things go.
I just read somewhere, it was probably fake news, but I read somewhere that people over 50 should only work 3 days a week.
That's an interesting concept. All right, when does that start?
I don't know.
Let's see how that works. Let's try that for a little while.
And then how does that work for Jasmine, who's under 50?
Oh, Jasmine has to work every day.
You guys forgot about me.
Yeah, you got to keep working,
Jasmine. Well, we can't lie.
Can you make a fake ID for me?
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. Not at all.
I had the worst fake ID, but it worked.
Did you?
In the back of Rolling Stone magazine, you could mail away for it, and it was like a Michigan license, which... I have to be honest with you, I don't think it resembled anything that looked like a Michigan license.
Yeah.
It just was a thing that said Michigan on it.
Sure.
And it works in Illinois.
So you would send them a picture of yourself?
Yeah.
And then how long after that? 6 weeks?
Probably quicker than that.
Yeah. And it fooled more people than it didn't fool?
Yeah, if I used it in Illinois.
Yeah.
You know, because... Back then, people didn't know what a Michigan license plate looked or license.
Who could possibly even imagine what it would look like?
People aged over 40 perform best with a 3-day work week.
Oh, well, anyone, I think, who wouldn't? Because then you would focus on those 3 days and you go, 4 days weekend. I love this.
In middle and older age, which is what we are.
Yeah. Yep.
God, over 40s middle age, I guess.
Yeah, because anyone who tells you that your 50s are middle aged, realistically, you're not going to live to 110, realistically. So really, 40 is middle aged.
That's sad.
But how clever of somebody to go, we can't tell people that. Tell people 55 is middle aged, or everyone would be depressed all the time. So good marketing ploy.
In middle and older age, working part-time could be effective in maintaining cognitive ability. A 3-day week gets the best performance from workers aged over 40, according to a new study.
Yep.
Researchers found the cognitive performance of middle-aged people improved as the working week increased up to 25 hours a week. Man.
Mm-hmm. All right. Push for the 3-day. See what happens. All they can do is say no.
It was found those working 25 hours a week performed best, while those working 55 hours a week showed results worse than retired or unemployed participants.
Yeah.
We're in that 25-hour-a-week thing, so maybe we should just shut up.
Well, yeah. We're way below the average. I always think that, like, right now, I don't know if you know this, but the Cubs are doing this stretch where they're playing 30 games in 30 days. At the beginning of the season, they had a bunch of rainouts.
Oh.
So now at the end of the season, they got to make those days up. So normally during a season, you don't go 30 days without at least one or two breaks, but that's what's been going on right now. And all the players are talking about fatigue, and you go, you guys are in peak physical condition. You're at your pro athletes who condition themselves all day, every day to do this, and those guys can't do 30 days in a row.
See, and that's something that I can't fathom because, you know, I think about like when the Rolling Stones are on tour, sometimes they do like, I don't know, back-to-back nights.
Right. Oh, a lot of times.
And there might be a break here and there, but it's like sometimes a year-long tour.
It's a grind.
I don't know how they do that and how Mick keeps his voice and his dance moves.
Yeah. Yes.
The rooster.
Yes.
I don't know how that happens. And then, you know, you play tennis almost every day, don't you?
I play 4 or 5 days a week.
And they this is what they're doing for a living. They're not going to play 30 days in a row. It's not like forever days in a row.
But even when a team plays, and it's rare that a team plays 30 days in a row. I don't remember the last time a White Sox team or a Cubs team played 30 straight days. And actually, one of those days, I have to say, even though they were scheduled to play, got rained out. So it technically, even though they showed up, and they suited up, they still didn't play that day. But even when they do play a 30-day span, those guys don't play every game. They'll sit a guy for a game or two. When I went to the game on Sunday, Javi Baez, who I was very anxious to see, he's El Mago, Wendy. I wanted to see El Mago.
What does that mean?
The magician. He took the day off.
So then they're fine. So they have a day off.
They should be fine, but whenever they talk to these guys... A lot of the focus is about that, about how are you guys holding up 30 games in 30 days, and you see these guys just go, oh, it's brutal. And a game lasts about 2.5 to 3 hours. So you go, can it really be? And half the game, if you're a player, you're sitting on the bench. And half the game, you're standing out in the field going, I wonder if the ball will be hit to me. So it's not like you're not moving nonstop for 3 hours. I'm not complaining.
I know.
I'm just saying that it's not nonstop action. You know, there's a
mental action the whole game.
There's a lot of mental action. Sure.
Minnesota has a stretch of 41 days, August 1st to September 10th, that was packed with 40 scheduled games.
Wow. That's a lot. In all fairness to the good people of Minnesota, that team is out of it. The Twins aren't going to go anywhere. The Cubs are right in the heart of a pennant race, so they have to play sharp baseball. They really they need to focus. Minnesota could call it in.
Well, how could we get them a day off?
Well, it's funny because during the rain, the game got rained out the other day. Everybody was kind of hinting at that this is a good thing. this is a good thing. Although everybody made a point of saying they still had to show up, and they were still the mindset of it's a game day. I got to play baseball today, even though they didn't.
Well, that's a lot. I don't watch the Cubs. I don't really root against the Cubs anymore.
Right. Thank you for that.
I'm just not a fan.
Right.
So
right.
They have the potential of making the playoffs.
Yeah, they have a 2.5-game lead. The season is over in 13 days.
Wow.
So, nothing's a given, but if everything goes according to plan, they should be okay. Milwaukee's chasing them. They'll get the wild card.
What about the White Sox?
The White Sox have already been mathematically eliminated.
Yeah. Even when they were tied for second or something, or they were in third place, they still were eliminated. How does that happen?
Yeah, because Cleveland is way, way out in front of them. So, but they made some inroads. I'm confident that the White Sox, they've got a plan in place that is much like the Cubs' plan of a few years ago. The Kopech thing was a little bit of a problem because he's going to miss all of next season.
And maybe even the following one for a little
bit. Possible.
And I have another question for you since it's interview Bill Leff about baseball.
Yes.
What kind of surgery is Michael Kopech having?
He's having Tommy John surgery.
And who is Tommy John?
Tommy John is a pitcher who pitched for the White Sox for a little while, probably best known as a Los Angeles Dodger, but he was with several teams, and he was the first one to have this arm surgery done. Now, back then, they didn't know if the surgery would take.
So this was kind of experimental at the time?
Extremely experimental. And to me, is there a greater honor than having a surgery named after
you?
Yeah,
how about it?
Because for the rest of time, the question you just asked is probably asked every day. Anytime somebody goes, he's having Tommy John surgery, you go, oh, really? What? I don't know who that is or why. What? Huh? Because he pitched quite a while ago. He pitched in the 70s.
But that was the first time it was done successfully or even attempted?
I think attempted. Because he did come back and pitch. Now, back then, he wasn't as good. Listen to this part of the story, because this is the best part of the story. He wasn't as good as he was prior to the surgery. Pitchers now, more times than not, throw better and faster and harder than before the surgery.
Can you get elective Tommy John surgery?
It's not
advised.
It's not advised. I wonder sometimes if somebody wouldn't lean that way.
Well, here's what it is. A surgical procedure in which a healthy tendon is extracted from your arm or sometimes a leg.
Yes.
And is used to replace an arm's torn ligament. The healthy tendon is threaded through holes drilled into the bone above and below the elbow.
That's why you don't get a lot of elective Tommy John surgery. Yeah. Jim Toronto had Elton John surgery.
What does that consist of? Putting crazy glasses and platform shoes on you?
Yeah, they weld them to your head. You can never take the crazy glasses off.
How long does it take to recover?
You never do. It's sad, Wendy, but you never really truly recover from Elton John surgery. I had Olivia Newton-John surgery a couple years ago.
And what did that do for you?
John Travolta kept stopping by the house. It was very awkward.
It's ulnar collateral.
Ulnar. That means of the ulna.
Your ulnar nerve.
Yeah.
Your ulna nerve is your funny bone.
Yes.
It is. It's that little area that sometimes I like to just hit.
Why?
Because it's like reflex. That's where your reflex is. The same thing. I'm amazed when you go to the doctor and they check your reflexes. First of all, I don't know why they still do that, but it's just amazing.
Isn't that curious?
But I love when it happens. It's like, oh, I'm going to fight it, but nope, there goes my foot.
Take the little funny hammer.
Yeah.
The reflex hammer.
The triangular hammer.
Yeah.
The rubber triangular hammer.
And then they just tap you on the knee or on the arm.
It's like a little wedge of cheese.
Oh,
it is. What?
Where it's do you go for yours? Mars Cheese Castle?
Maybe.
For a checkup?
Then I stop at the Broad Stop. But I love when they check my reflexes. I don't, and they do it in your ankle, too.
Yeah.
There's, and then your foot just jerks. There's nothing. I know it's a reflex, duh.
You know what's funny? I've done this with my doctor, is when she does that on my knee, I punch her. Smack her as hard. Hey, what's wrong with you? It's my reflex. What are you going to do?
It's ulnar collateral ligament reconstruction, and boy, I didn't know what it entailed. I didn't know who Tommy John was. Now I know too much.
You don't remember he pitched for the White Sox in the 70s for a while. Great pitcher. Really good pitcher.
And he was he better after the surgery?
No, back then, it was just a matter of, let's see if this works and he could ever pitch again. And he came back and still pitched for a while, but I don't remember him being anywhere near as effective. But by that point, he was already in his mid to late 30s, which, you know, if you're a pitcher, that's the part of your career where you're usually just kind of hanging on, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Every once in a while, you get a guy that really excels. Dennis Eckersley, I don't know if you remember him.
I know that name.
He got better as he got older. There's always a couple of guys where you just go, how are you doing this? I'd make the same argument about Ben Zobrist of the Cubs. He's a better player now than he was in his heyday when he was in his mid-20s, and he's in his mid-30s now.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I heard Steve Cochran saying, and I never really thought about it, when the whole Michael Kopech thing went down, it's not like you can work out as much as you want, but the only way to train your arm to do that is to throw a ball.
That's
like
it.
You can't lift weights, you can't do stretches,
it's just
throwing the ball.
Right. And you don't want to rush back from something like that because you could aggravate it forever. So you have to be very delicate with something like that. Now, because it's 2018, there's no reason to believe he won't come back. And, I mean, that guy throws a big, hard fastball. There's no reason to believe he won't be able to do what he was still doing. But back then, in the early days of this, you go, well, he can come back. Will he throw the way he used to? Probably not.
And, I mean, just looking, when they always capture a pitcher in a still shot, it's like your arm is funky when you pitch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That who figured out that's how you do it?
Well,
I mean, your arm is really in a foreign position.
There have always been guys who try other things. Every once in a while, you'll hear about a pitcher who throws sidearm or not really underhand, but like a sinker ball pitcher. I mean, they try other ways of doing it, but for the most part, that's going to be the motion that gets you the most velocity.
Yeah.
You know?
How long do pitchers typically last?
There is no typical, because there are guys that come up, you know, for a season and then that, you know, they don't have it. There are guys, I think Greg Maddux pitched for 24 years, 23 years maybe.
And catchers, too. I don't know how they can do it for so long. I mean,
bend down that way for a whole game. Yeah.
I mean, that isn't good for your knees.
No. That's where you're getting a lot of wear and tear on catchers.
And it's not like you're just kneeling and you're stuck in that position. You got to spring into action.
Ready. Yeah.
That can't be good.
I don't think it is either.
Other than that, baseball, I don't think takes that big of a toll on your body. But the pitchers and catchers.
Well, except guys are getting injured every day doing various things. I don't know. I know you're not a Cubs fan, so you wouldn't follow this, but Pedro Strop, the guy who injured himself, he's a pitcher, and the other day they let him bat, which usually late in the game you'd throw in a pinch hitter, but they wanted him to pitch one more inning, so he got hurt running to first base. He's out for the rest of the season, you know, just from...
That's embarrassing.
He hit first base awkward. The way he stepped down on it messed up, I think, a hamstring. I think.
That's because he's not used to doing it, right?
Right. Yeah, he doesn't bat much. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks for a little baseball moment.
This has been This Week in Baseball. I'm Mel Allen.
I don't know who that
How
is.
How about that? He used to have a show, This Week in Baseball. It would be on Saturdays. So back then, in the heyday of the show, you didn't have stuff like ESPN showing you highlights of baseball games. If you wanted to see any highlights of baseball, you had to watch This Week in Baseball. That was it. And every time they would show a clip of anybody, like, they'd go, in Cincinnati, Dave Concepcion made this catch. And then he just makes a crazy catch. And he would say the same thing after everyone. How about that? Every single time. You knew he was going to say it. I'd say it along at home. In Pittsburgh, Dave Parker had too many hot dogs. How about that?
A listener has just texted us. What is your name? Who is?
I'm Bill.
No, no, no. Who was the
character? Mel Allen?
Yeah, Mel. Read the article on the latest ARP, AARP bulletin interviewing Tommy John. He feels bad that 57% of TJ surgeries are to people between 15 and 19 years old.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He feels overuse in youth sports is an issue. Great show as always. Alfredo
Sauce.
The Dark.
Oh. Yeah, what happens now is that if you're a high school athlete or a college athlete and you mess up your arm, they fast track you for what he called TJ surgery. It's called that. It's Tommy John surgery. And a lot of doctors say we're using this way too often on kids. But the way they see it, the kid or the kid's parents or the coaches, is that if you're seriously considering a career in sports and you don't have it done, you're done. You won't play.
Isn't that sad when you think about 15-year-old who that could be it?
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It is. How about that?
How about that is right. Well, thank you. I needed to know who Tommy John was.
Yes. What a nice man he was. Can I tell you something, like an inside story about Tommy John? There was a book written years ago called Sporting Ladies about the women who are married to professional athletes. It was written by a lady named Sandy Bando, whose husband, Sal Bando, played baseball mostly for the Oakland A's, but he a couple other teams at the end. And Sal Bando said of Tommy John that of all the baseball players he's ever met, only one did not cheat on his wife, and that was Tommy John.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
How about that?
I don't want to know.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break. Judy will come in, and she'll get you the news. And then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We are going to check in with Eric Rung, who is covering the Van Dyke Laquan McDonald trial. I think we're going to talk to him in about 10 minutes or so. But Judy Pilak is here with our news. All right, thanks, Jude.
Absolutely.
We go live to, I believe it's 26 and California. Eric Rung is on the line with us, one of our reporters and anchors here at WGN and WGN-TV. Eric, my main question that we'd like to start out with is the trial's supposed to be broadcast live, and Jason Van Dyke's partner then says, I don't want my part broadcast. Why did that happen?
Good afternoon. It's a little unclear as to why there was no video or audio transmission on that. Kind of what has been talked about anyway is that perhaps because he has immunity, that is why the judge allowed his testimony not to be broadcast over television, either video or audio. He, of course, is also facing two charges stemming from this. One is an obstruction of justice charge. The other is a misconduct charge. So the reason, again, we're not getting any official word on why the judge decided that, but that is kind of the thinking, at least of the reporters that have been here covering this so far today.
So, Eric, as far as you know, could anybody, any potential witness, petition the court for just that and say it'd be better for me or for all parties involved if my testimony not be included in an audio or video? Or how does that play out?
Generally speaking, in my experience covering high-profile cases over the years, you can petition the judge. You can ask the judge that your testimony not be broadcast. That doesn't mean, though, that the judge will necessarily grant that request. I've been in situations where the judge has said, no, your testimony will be public. And I've also been in some situations where the judge, for whatever reason, has said, I understand why you don't want this testimony to be broadcast, and has granted granted them not to have to be broadcast during the trial. Mm. So it's really just up to the judge. The judge can pull the transmission at any point.
Okay. But there's still whatever is said then, there's still transcripts of that. That still goes into the court record, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
But not for the public to read, right?
I mean, they could if they wanted to. They could FOIA the court records once the case is over, and then you know, go through it line by line if they wanted to. It would be open to the public eventually.
Okay, but not currently.
Right.
And so what has happened today? This is lunch recess that they're on right now?
Yeah, so we've heard from four witnesses today. By far, the testimony from Jason Van Dyke's partner, Joe Walsh, who was by far the most vivid testimony that was given today, which, of course, no one was able to see or hear. Basically, what they were saying, the prosecution, when they were talking to him, is they were bringing him through that video. They basically frame by frame, the video that we've all seen now several times over, and had him explain exactly what was happening and what his thought process was. And what this former officer said was that his initial thought when he saw Laquan McDonald was in that Burger King parking lot is that he was going to head toward the Burger King. And then the prosecution asked, did he go in? He said no. And then my thought was he was going to go to the Dunkin' Donuts across the street. Did he go in? And the answer was no. He said, the prosecution asked, did you ever see him make any threatening motions toward officers? And he said he saw that Laquan McDonald had raised the knife about to his shoulder and kind of turned toward him and Jason Van Dyke just seconds before the shots were fired. Now, the defense came up and they said, can you explain a little bit more exactly what you saw Laquan McDonald do that night? And so then in very dramatic fashion, he got up in front of the jury and started walking like we have seen Laquan McDonald do as he was walking down the middle of Pulaski there. And he raised his right arm about shoulder width and turned it toward the jury, which would have been toward himself and Jason Van Dyke. He said, that is where I think the first shot was fired. Now, the prosecution came back up and they said, well, why don't we see that on the videotape? And he said, because you're not seeing it from my perspective at all. That perspective was from behind Laquan McDonald. It wasn't from where we were. So he said that is what he saw from his perspective, which, of course, will be very important as this case moves forward.
I am. How long do we think this trial is going to go on? I'm just curious. You probably have no way of knowing.
No, we really don't. But, I mean, they are really working through a lot of witnesses. I'm sorry. Moved away from the courtroom for a second. I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought.
They're rolling through some of these witnesses rapidly.
Okay, so, yeah, we really have no idea. I mean, the general thinking is it could go a couple of weeks. As far as deliberations, that could also go 2 to 3 weeks, so too. But they are moving through witnesses fast. We went through 8 yesterday. We've already gone through 4 today. And we could obviously see 4 more this afternoon if they keep going in this quick succession here.
Eric, several people mentioned yesterday that the courtroom was far from filled to capacity. And normally a case like this, your busiest days are your first or second day. What's going on there? Why do you think it isn't filled?
I don't know. It's very interesting because, you know, we also expect it, as did the defense and the prosecution in this case, as well as the judge, that there would be not only a packed courtroom, but there would be protesters outside of 26 in California every single day of this trial.
Yeah.
And we saw a few here and there as far as protesters go, and there are plenty of seats in the courtroom for people to watch. So everybody is really surprised at that. I mean, usually in these high-profile cases, I mean, you're sitting shoulder-to-shoulder with the person next to you, and you're sitting there trying to take notes and but that's not like that at all in this case.
It's very mysterious. I can't figure out a reason why that would play out that way.
I can't either. In my experience, I'm very surprised, as yeah. are a lot of the other reporters down here. When they were walking into 26 in California, not only today, but yesterday, not seeing the protesters, not being in a packed courtroom. It is very interesting, and I just... Maybe because it's being broadcast live. I'm not sure, but...
Yeah.
You know, that could be a part of it, but you would think that, you know, that the courtroom definitely would be packed.
Well, I remember prior to the case, they were talking about trying to figure out how to accommodate all the people. They were considering various lotteries and things to get people into the courtroom, but that ended up being a non-issue. But it's just, it's very unsettling. I don't know the reason, and you don't either, obviously. So
No. I'm very surprised myself.
The mood of Officer Van Dyke, how would you characterize that?
Very stoic, as it has been throughout this entire case, at every hearing prior to the trial starting. However, for the first time, I did see him actually crack a smile today. The jury, when they were first brought in, the judge asked each one of them individually if anybody had spoken to them about this case, or had they spoken to anybody about this case, which, of course, they're not supposed to do while they're on the jury. The first juror, a woman, said, yes, my brother-in-law talked to me about it. She had the judge had her look at Van Dyke and say, you know, can you still give him a fair trial? And she said, yes. Look at the prosecution. Can you give them a fair trial? Yes. And then Judge Gahan said, well, tell your brother-in-law, if he talks to you about this case again, I'm going to throw him in jail.
Oh.
And that's when I saw Jason Van Dyke actually show a little emotion, something I had not seen him do throughout this entire process.
Yeah.
I know the jurors aren't supposed to speak to one another, but, you know, when they're getting their lunch recess and they go to the cafeteria or wherever they're going to eat, I just wonder, you know, if they're like, how about that witness earlier today? But they're not supposed
to. No, I think they can't. They can talk to each other,
I think. Outside of the chambers?
Oh, Eric, are they allowed to? I thought they were allowed to.
They're not supposed to discuss the case even with each other until deliberation.
Oh. All right.
Isn't that weird?
And they are watched. They do have a bailiff that goes with them to lunch.
Really?
And brings them back up to the courtroom. Yeah. So they are being watched.
That's pretty fascinating to me. Mm. All right.
I will say this of the jury, because I was watching them as the testimony was going on here today. It's really interesting, and every jury that I've ever seen is always a little different as far as taking notes and things like this. But again, a high-profile case like this, you have some people taking page after page after page of notes, and then you have some of the jurors that haven't opened their notebook all morning. They do look as if they are definitely paying attention to the evidence and the testimony being given, but it's just interesting to see the different reactions from the jurors to either the video or the questions that the prosecution asked or the defense asked, just how they react. I mean, for the most part, like I said, they are definitely paying attention to the testimony, but it's interesting to see which jurors are taking these just, you know, page after page after notes and which ones that, you know, are not, and just will depend on their memory when it does come down to deliberation.
Right.
I almost feel that if you're not taking notes, and this is just me talking in my opinion, that you almost have your mind made up already, because you'd feel like you'd have to jot down a few things like, oh, that's an interesting point, even just a few words to say, oh, that's something I didn't know. But the fact that they're not taking notes makes me wonder if they're already decided.
I don't think I would take notes. I would just
really,
you know, I would rather just take every second in than spend it writing, I think.
I'm just fascinated.
I mean, yeah, you do miss things when you take notes. I mean, yeah. Even as a reporter, I mean, you're sitting there and you're always a sentence or two behind.
Right.
As you're trying to you know, get through the testimony. So, yeah, you could miss some things here and there. But I think at the end of the day, when you go into deliberations, you are taking everybody into account. And so, well, maybe I have a gap at this point in the trial. What do you have there? Or, well, I have this a little differently than you do. You know, and then that's the deliberation. That's what they're doing back there, is putting it all together.
Eric, do you think that the defense's best play is to call as many police officers in as witnesses? I don't even mean witness in that they were there at the time, but just bring in various police officers to talk about the rigors of that job and how every second can be, you know, something those of us that are not police officers, something that we could never fathom or understand.
You know, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, you know, obviously it's the prosecution's job to prove the case. The defense doesn't have to.
Right.
So I think what they're doing is they're using people like Van Dyke's former partner to talk about that and to kind of get that out there and to talk about the danger that possibly one could face if they are confronted with a knife and the training. I don't know if they actually will, and I don't even know if the judge would really allow it. I don't know how much that would definitely help him in this situation. Again, I'm not an attorney, but just in my experience, I see them kind of doing that already with the officers that are being called.
Yeah.
One question today that was asked Van Dyke's partner was, this was by the prosecution, which was, If you thought that your partner, Jason Van Dyke's life was in danger, would you have fired your weapon? And he said, yes, I would have, basically saying he didn't. And so he didn't feel as if his partner or himself were in danger. So, and then the defense would come back and say, you know, they would talk about the process like you were talking about, Bill, about, and they would start getting into the 21-foot rule of if you're confronting somebody with a knife, you're in 21 feet, they could come and stab you before you could get your gun unholstered.
Yeah.
So that's how I think that they're doing it. Of course, you know, that could all be thrown out the window and they could call a dozen officers.
Sure.
I don't know how much that helps them, though, in this situation.
All right.
And what's on tap for after lunch recess?
Well, we don't know just yet. We just don't know.
I guess they don't do a preview and say after lunch, here's what's happening.
No, not yet. Anyway, I'll ask the judge about that, though.
Yeah, you'll go to jail with the brother-in-law of the juror.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
There was another reporter whose phone went off today in court, which is a huge no-no, and she was warned very sternly that if it happened again, she was out.
Wow.
Dude,
yeah,
that's
definitely no nonsense.
Yeah,
that
sure.
is the time you turn your phone off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, here's something crazy. I probably haven't had the ringer on my phone on in probably 10 years.
I believe it.
You better believe that I checked after that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Eric, thanks for spending time with us. It's you know, it's such an important case. I'm glad you get to see it all play out firsthand, and we really appreciate you reporting back to us.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
Thank you so much.
It's
Eric Rung. That's an interesting story to be covering. 26th in California now.
Why do you think every reporter that I heard, and a couple on radio and a couple on television, talking about the lack of people, you know, the courtroom filled to capacity is what everybody imagined for this case.
Who wants to go there and go see it live? It's being broadcast on CLTV and...
But there's so many, I don't know if the term is court junkies, but people that want to be there for something like this, and for some reason they're just not turning out. I don't know what it is. You would just think if you had any kind of vested interest at all in it, I would even consider, if I wasn't working during this, I'd almost want to go and see it.
I wouldn't, because I just feel like there is just a turmoil brewing. I really do. I would want to be...
No matter what the verdict is.
I know.
Right.
This
Sorry,
is really,
Bill Daly, but you know what we're talking about.
It is. This is the biggest, one of the biggest cases, if not the biggest case in Chicago history. We were talking about that with Rich Lankoff, because the outcome of this is just going to be so split.
Yeah. All right. I want to get back to something we started the show out with, and that is last night's Emmy Awards, really quickly. I was trying to think of what could have happened to make it more entertaining, more interesting, better in any way, shape, or form. Because even though I love the hosts and you do too, I thought last night was good and not great. You know, here's what I think I would have done immediately to fix it. At every award show, well, not every award show, but many of the award shows, whoever the host or hostess is, does a thing where they target, for lack of a better word, certain people in the audience. They'll mention who's there. And then everybody applauds because it's good to see that guy or girl.
It's a cheap applause trick.
And then, of course, it's a cheap applause trick, but you also get a little bit of a scrape in on that guy. You get a little bit of a dig, a little joke at the expense of whoever that person is. They didn't do that yesterday. And I think when you do that, what it does is it gets the room kind of ready. Like, okay, this is live. They see me. They know I'm here. I could be the target at any moment. But yesterday, for some reason, that wasn't a part of it.
Was Rowan Farrow in the audience? Because he got
Ronan
a shout. Ronan, yeah.
Right.
He got a shout out. I thought they pushed the envelope more than I thought they would.
I wanted more of it. Like when I use Ricky Gervais as an example. That's a guy who, when he shows up to these things, it's a dangerous evening.
I just look at him and he offends me. Seriously.
Even... You know who else was great at it was when Tina Fey and Amy Poehler co-hosted. They did the same thing. They point out people in the audience. Everybody applauds. Oh, it's good to see that guy. And then they zing him. I like that.
But they are able to do it. Colin Jost and Michael Che.
But they do that on Weekend Update to some extent. It's more... it's more in the political realm than in the show business realm, but they still do it.
Bill,
they know how to do
it. These are two little dudes that are on SNL Weekend Update in a room full of these superstars.
Right.
I imagine they were feeling a little intimidated.
I just wish they didn't. I don't know why they would have. He's got Scarlett Johansson.
I know.
He's doing fine. He can take some more chances.
I thought I found myself going, oh, no, you didn't, a couple of times.
There was a little bit of that.
I thought they did a pretty good job about not going, you know, there's alcohol tonight and, you know, this is perfect timing.
Yeah.
You want to get somebody in an uninhibited mood at a work party,
right.
You know. They had some.
They played the moment well. I mean, that was good. But if you look back at who's done this recently, everyone from Billy Crystal to Jimmy Kimmel to fill in the blank of anyone who's done it well, there's always that moment of, all right, let's play the room right now. Let's see who's in the room that we can take a jab at. And that was, I think that's a good mood setter. And I was missing that yesterday.
I don't think they're big enough to be doing
that.
I mean, Billy Crystal, you know, zings you. It's fine.
Yeah.
And Billy Crystal, in my opinion, did too much song and dance. I mean, we all have our own.
Right.
You know, things that you enjoy about it. I thought they did a decent job. They did better than I expected.
Oh, all right.
I just.
Do you think it's an automatic ask back for next year? Was it that good where whoever's behind it next year goes, well, we got to get Colin and Michael. They were the host last year. We got to get them back.
Who did it last year? See, I can never remember. Did Jimmy Kimmel ever do it?
Jimmy Kimmel's done the Oscars the last 2 years, so you don't. If you host one of them, you rarely host another one. Was it Neil Patrick Harris last year? Does that sound right?
I don't know. Isn't that terrible how we can't remember?
I think it was Neil Patrick Harris.
And he wasn't good.
I think. No, I don't think he was. But he's done the Tony Awards, and he's done really good on the Tony Awards.
That's his cup of tea.
With his
pinky up. He enjoys that cup of tea.
He enjoys his. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
I thought. I mean, I'm surprised to hear you say that you expected more.
It wasn't as. It wasn't as dangerous as I wanted.
But again, this is the first time they've ever done it.
Right.
I bet they thought, you know, people are doubting us. Let's just, you know, let's hit the strong jokes. I thought they did okay.
I wonder if we asked them that question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you think you did, honestly?
Well, book them for tomorrow. Jasmine,
tomorrow.
Michael Che, and Colin Jost for tomorrow.
Get them tomorrow. All right. We'll ask them that question.
She just ran out of here.
I saw that. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we will close it up. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
All right. That about does it. You didn't even ask me how I was. I went to the doctor yesterday.
I was getting to that. I wanted to save it to the end of the show. Wendy, how are you? Everything all right?
I'm
I know you
fine.
Had to go to the doctor yesterday.
My sinuses are impacted, so that is causing my eustachian tubes to be clogged. But I have no sinus infection, no ear infection, just Sudafed, and it should all clear up.
All right. So that insurance policy I took out on you, that was a waste of my time, wasn't it?
You should have more faith in me. I'm not going to go that easy. I'm going to be kicking and screaming.
I bet you will. I'm sure you will.
At you.
That's fine. Whatever. Whatever gets you through the night.
Thank you, Beatles, John Lennon, whoever.
Yep. That's it for today. Tomorrow we will do it again. Different topics, probably. Different outfits.
Maybe. For both.
We'll see how things go. Please tune in tomorrow. It'll be Wednesday. Bye, everybody. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.